Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, June 4th, 2018. A spokesman for Paul Malong's group threatens President Kiir if his spokesman does not stop criticizing Malong.
I share my own self-Kiir on creating unfounded rumors and also talking about the things that have gone in the past. Those things should be stopped.
And an IDP in Juba is shot and killed by men in uniform.
They point the guns on him with a small boy that they were moving together. And that boy runs up to the football field, which is close also to the UN house. And he was gunned down and he sustained 3 shots.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebel leader General Paul Malong is warning President Kiir to stop defaming him. Malong wrote a letter asking Mr. Kiir to advise his spokesman, Atenwe Katen, to stop labeling what Malong calls false accusations against leader of his rebel group, the South Sudan United Front. Sunday Dejon, spokesman for the group, says if President Kiir continues to defame Malong, the rebels will be forced to reveal sensitive information about President Kiir.
As you have seen from the content of the letter, I share my own self-Kiir on creating unfounded rumors and also talking about the things that have gone in the past. Those things should be stopped and people should open a chapter that is actually new and that is also for handling the matters that are current, not the past events.
What are these you are calling unfounded rumors?
The unfounded rumors are actually carried around by the men that are employed by Salva Kiir. One of them is the attribution of Matiang Nyor to General Paul Malong, which is not true. And if people were to be asked to go to the genesis of that, the whole thing will culminate into implication of Kiir himself. That's one. Another one, General Paul Malong has been together with Kiir from 1984 to 2018. They have not been far apart. And they know each other better. If one has opted now to discredit the other in the public domain, then there would be consequences to that, simply because the other one will retaliate, whether verbally or in a manner that will discredit the former.
Why would you want to distance General Paul Malong from Matiang Nyor? Matiang Nyor came into the limelight when Paul Malong became the chief of staff and he's associated with Matiang Nyor. Why would you want to kill that?
Well, John Tanza, logically speaking, if you are commissioned today to be commander of the armed forces, for example, chief of general staff of the SPLA, would you yourself as Tanza affair with troops together? Those troops were existing, and the commander has only been commissioned to command them. Only Malong became the commander of the forces, not only Matiang Nyor, but the entire SPLA, just for an appointment.
Some South Sudanese are saying that the letter Paul Malong wrote to President Kiir is nothing but empty threats. Do you agree with that?
Well, there is no threat that is empty. If Kiir won war of words or war of bullets, he will face it. There is no problem with that. And this has to happen at appropriate time.
Some supporters of President Kiir are saying that this letter is to threaten or intimidate supporters of Kiir from revealing the bad things Malong was doing in the government while he was the chief of staff. How would you react to that allegation?
This letter is a go-ahead. If Kiir dares to speak, or his supporters or whoever dares to speak about Malong in a negative way, then we will open up the piles that belongs to Kiir and the whole society will now judge worldwide on who did what and who did not do what.
Sunday, when fighting breaks out, there's normally no angels there. I mean, everybody who is involved in a war has done bad things. Why would you defend Malong and you don't want anybody to talk about the things he did in the past?
Well, the current event are not necessarily the wars that have happened. They are bigger than that. We want a transformation in the country. We have never said that Malong is an angel. And if somebody somewhere is saying that he's a devil, then that person is the chief devil, could be the main devil that asked the small devil to do anything devilish, if we are to talk that way, the way they are referring to General Paul Malong. Who gives orders? Malong is like a chalk observer who will only implement the orders that come from the commander-in-chief.
If your boss, Paul Malong, was obeying orders from the president, why did he travel the whole night from Juba to Yirol when he was fired from his position?
His orders, commander-in-chief has removed him from power, and there were elements that were trying now to fight with him from within Juba. And as a caring person who does not want South Sudanese to die, he opted to tell the president through proxies, including the chief administrator of the president, because president was not immediately present to communicate to Malong. He was informed that I am going home to rest, because Malong has already prepared his retirement in his own village, where he will stay with the community. Now he traveled by that night to avoid fighting in Juba. That is the main reason why he was traveling. He was avoiding fighting in Juba.
That's Sunday Dejean, spokesman of the rebel South Sudan United Front group, speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Nairobi earlier today. Unidentified gunmen in military uniform shot and killed a student at a Protection of Civilians or POC site in Juba yesterday. That's according to UNMISS and a community leader. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Atek Chan Nyal, deputy chairperson at POC 3, says a primary aid pupil was returning to POC 1 from attending a community meeting at POC 3 when an unknown assailant shot and killed him at the camp's weapons-free zone.
In the bushes between the two POCs, where UN called weapons-free zone, emerged unarmed men from the bushes wearing SPLA uniform, and then they point the guns on him with a small boy that they were moving together. And that boy runs up to the football field, which is close also to UN house, and he was gunned down and he sustained 3 shots.
Nyal says UN peacekeepers did not intervene. He says UN peacekeepers blocked all humanitarian agencies who usually provide services to the POC from entering the site this morning.
Community were trying to ask for help from UN. No one shown up. Then we stayed there at the hospital until 11 o'clock and 33 minutes in the morning. So when community saw that no one is trying to help bury the dead body, we collected the body and carried ourselves when we were moving footing to an area, a cemetery which is close to UN house. And we buried the body today morning.
In an email response, Joshua Mali, a multimedia officer at the United Nations mission in South Sudan, said, quote, "and misreceived information that one male adult internal displaced person IDP residing in Juba POC Site 1 was shot dead in the north side of the weapons-free zone by an unknown perpetrator," unquote. And Ms. said, UNMISS doesn't have any more information at the moment, and the mission is currently working to gather more details about the incident. South Sudan's military spokesman, Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong, says he has no information about the incident. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The government chief whip in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly has resigned, saying he did so to block lawmakers from passing legislation to increase lawmakers' salaries. South Sudanese are the lowest paid lawmakers in the region. MP Atim Gareng says if lawmakers increase their salaries, South Sudan's economic woes will worsen. Waki Simon Wudu has this exclusive story for VOA from Juba.
You want to convert your salary before the devaluation with the prevailing rate of our currency, then we have to do it to all employees of this country. We do it to the soldiers, we do it to the teachers, to the nurses, to everyone in this country. If somebody was receiving $200, that has also multiplied his $200 with 132, which is the rate of the currency now. In the Bank of South Sudan, that will be acceptable.
And with that, Atem Garang, the former government chief whip, resigned last week. Garang says he resigned both from the assembly and from his position as chief whip on moral grounds.
people of this country have contributed a lot during the war. They have died. They were not paid for 20 years. Nobody was actually receiving any payment. So therefore, I said that the way we are doing it is not be acceptable to our people. So let us delay it. It is your right as members of parliament. You have the right to improve your salaries. But also you have to improve also your constituents, the people who have elected you, the people who are teaching your children, the people who are nursing your people, your members of your family, including ourselves. We are being nursed by nurses, by people who also they would like their salaries to be improved.
Lawmakers are expected to debate an emolument bill which was tabled in parliament nearly a month ago. If passed and signed into law by President Salva Kiir, lawmakers' salaries will increase from 9,000 South Sudanese pounds to about 300,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. Before the South Sudanese pound plummeted in value against the U.S. dollar, 9,000 South Sudanese pounds was equivalent to about 3,000 U.S. dollars. Today, that same amount is equivalent to about 29 U.S. dollars on the black market. Garang says amending the bill with the objective of increasing lawmakers' salaries is not realistic considering South Sudan's current economic crisis. And he says even though the monthly amount lawmakers receive is the equivalent to only 29 U.S. dollars a month and they have not even been paid in the past 3 months, he still opposes the salary increase.
I am saying it is the right, but you know the time. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It is inappropriate time. Timing is wrong. Because see, the situation of the country, the situation of our economy, it needs us to come together. It needs us not somebody to eat alone, standing there under a tree alone, and others are dying of hunger.
Paul Yuani Bonjo, spokesman for the South Sudan National Parliament, says he read in local media accounts that Garang resigned to protest the move to increase lawmakers' salaries, but he says amending the emolument bill is not an individual matter.
Any item which is presented before the House by any member, it ceases to be his responsibility. It becomes immediately an issue of the parliament or an asset of the parliament. So it's no longer something to do with an individual, but it is a matter of the House now.
Bonjo calls Garang an experienced lawmaker, one who has contributed immensely to government during his time in politics.
So to us, it is a surprise when he heard that actually he tendered his resignation. Well, as an individual, I don't think that it will affect business. It will not affect business in the House, but most of us will miss him.
Anthony Lino Makana, the Speaker of Parliament, has yet to make a decision as to who will replace Garang in the Assembly and will assume his post as Chief Whip. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A top UN official calls on government leaders around the world to change the status quo in South Sudan. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you smile?
What makes me to smile is that whenever I am happy, I must express my feeling in terms of smiling.
When I see my friend is happy, and if he or she doesn't have any problem, I always do feel happy, and I will smile. It is also an answer for him to know that I'm happy because of his or her situation.
What makes me smile is, when there's something so funny, when there's some funny things happening, amused you, actually, you need to smile.
Something funny. When I hear something funny, yeah, that's it.
I'm just a joyful person, and mostly what makes me smile is if what I am doing has given me an achievement.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. An education official says enrollment in primary and secondary schools has improved significantly this year, despite the conflict. South Sudan's Minister of General Education says 1.5 million children enrolled in school this past May, and 46% of students are girls. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Michael Lopuki-Lotiam, Undersecretary in the South Sudan Ministry of General Education and Instruction, says the school attendance monitoring system reports 1.5 million children are attending school this year, compared to 915,000 in 2013 before the conflict erupted. He says that's a big improvement.
This year, as we begin the second term of the academic year in general education, the enrollment has peaked to 1.5 million children who are attending. And this statistic is drawn from about 3,800 schools in the entire country.
Lotiam says Awil, Jubek, Gogrial and Wau states have registered the highest number of children attending school this year, while Boma, Lol, Maiwut and Fashoda states registered the lowest. He says although some areas remain devastated by war, other places in the Greater Upper Nile region are seeing schools reopen. Last year, the European Union started a program to pay cash incentives to 30,000 teachers in 3,000 government-owned primary schools around the country who were experiencing delays in receiving their salaries. The program was earmarked to last 18 months. Teachers welcomed the EU's decision to come to their rescue. Deputy head teacher at Jubawan Girls Primary School, Sosen Mabruk, told South Sudan in Focus then that the EU-funded program would help them keep the school running and do a better job.
The schools are not functioning as they are to function. So the delay of salaries really affect our work. So at this time, we really welcome those people who want to assist us so that we are able to do our work effectively. So if the payment can start today, we will be happy. And then we will make sure that the second term will be successful, and also the final, which is the third term, will also be successful.
Before the conflict erupted in 2013, Lotiam says, less than 1 million children were registered in a school.
This record has been achieved despite the consequences of the conflict that have left 4 million displaced and more than half of the population food insecure. In some of the locations, especially in Greater Upper Nile, the schools are reopening too. And these schools are reopening for the first time since the conflict started.
And says Lotiam, more girls are attending primary and secondary school than in several previous years, thanks to a British-supported program called Girls Education South Sudan, which makes direct cash transfers to school girls.
As of the 18th May, girls made up to the proportion of a total of about 45.87% as compared to 2014, where they stood at 39.96%. However, there is still a lot that we need to do in order to bridge the gap that is still seen between the boys and the girls.
Lotiam says his ministry is extremely grateful to the donors and development partners who support children's education in South Sudan.
The major driving factors that has contributed to this improvement in enrollment include cash transfer. The European Union is supporting the ministry with the payment of the teacher's incentive. The World Food Program, through the provision of school meals, take-home ratio, has continued to encourage the attendance or the regular attendance of the children in the school.
He says the Norwegian government and the government of Japan are also helping train South Sudanese teachers and develop teacher training manuals. Despite the increase in school enrollment, ministry officials estimate that 2.2 million children are still out of school today in South Sudan due to the ongoing fighting and the inability of parents to pay for their children's education. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
A senior UN official is calling on government to target the leaders of South Sudan's warring factions with painful financial measures and other actions to persuade them to change the behavior that has plunged their country into a state of perpetual conflict and suffering. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
South Sudan's conflict is in its fifth year, with nothing more than unimaginable suffering for millions of civilians in sight. The United Nations says armed men subject civilians to unbearable abuse, using murder and rape as weapons of war. The war has driven more than 4 million South Sudanese from their homes, and according to the UN, more than half the population, or 7 million people, need humanitarian assistance. Despite ongoing efforts, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Mark Lowcock says the peace process has produced nothing. The war goes on, the gross violations of human rights go on, and so does the suffering. Lowcock says the belligerents do not seem to care about peace or the welfare of their people. He tells VOA measures that bear more directly on the financial interests of the people in control of the military should be considered.
In other places, things like visa bans have been used. Various forms of financial sanctions have been used. There's lots of concerns about how various parties in the conflict are enriching themselves through South Sudan's oil and gold and teak and, you know, its other natural resources, and lots of concern that a lot of South Sudan's wealth is being held outside the country.
Lowcock says some governments have legislative arrangements that allow them to look into these hidden stashes of wealth. The UN official says he welcomed a recent announcement by the White House that Washington was planning to review its assistance to South Sudan. He says similar action is being taken by ECHO, the European Commission's humanitarian office. While operational changes are being considered, Lowcock notes nobody is talking about cutting off humanitarian assistance to the people. He says this must continue, as without emergency relief, the situation would worsen and many people would die. In a related development, a Security Council resolution to extend sanctions on South Sudan was renewed for 45 more days Friday after the U.S.-led effort passed at the U.N. South Sudan's conflict began in 2013 as a power struggle between South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At least 50 people have believed to have been infected with Ebola virus in the outbreak in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The World Health Organization says there have been 35 confirmed cases and 19 suspected or probable cases. The WHO has recorded 25 deaths. Doctors Without Borders, known as MSF, has been at the forefront in efforts to contain this outbreak. Dr. Hilde de Klerk is one of the aid group's leading Ebola experts who has worked on the ground during several previous outbreaks. She says there is hope that the outbreak may be contained. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson from Brussels, where she is part of the command center team for MSF's response.
So from the moment that we received the alert that there were Ebola cases, we send out a first emergency team. It was a Congolese team, so it's an emergency team that is based in Kinshasa. So it was a team of 10 people. And then we send out even more, I think, at this time we're at like 35 staff in total, so international staff. And those people, yeah, it includes doctors, epidemiologists, health promoters, coordinators, water and sanitation experts. And we are involved mainly in patient management. So we constructed two, or you could even say three, centers. So two full centers and one transit center for patients. So people who are suspected to suffer from Ebola can be isolated there and treated. So they receive supportive treatment. What we also do is, and I think that's very important to mention, is that in each Ebola outbreak, it's very important that the community understands what's happening. Because Ebola is a disease that is, of course, very frightening, as it gives a big mortality between patients. So people are very often afraid. Sometimes people think it could be witchcraft or something that is causing those deaths. So we have health promoters on the field explaining people what is going on, and encouraging people actually to come to the health structure, so to the isolation wards, and let isolate their patients. So that's a very important task and activity that we're performing. We also have epidemiologists on the field, and also this is extremely important important, because as long as you don't have a view how the outbreak evolves, and with this I mean, like, as long as you don't know which villages, which families are hit, you can actually not control an outbreak. Because the outbreak control, one of the important pillars is really to follow up contacts of patients. Because as the disease transmits from person to person, you know that the people who were in direct contact with the patient will be the next patients. And so this is an enormous task. It's really getting out in the communities on motorbikes, sometimes by foot, to really find those people.
Now, at this point, the outbreak seems to be somewhat stable. We are not seeing, you know, the big fear initially was it would we would quickly see cases going down the Congo River. We would quickly see cases popping up in other areas. At this point, we're not seeing that. Is that a good sign, a bad sign? What does it mean?
For now, we hope indeed that it's a good sign. So what we know is that in the rural area where the epicenter was, where the outbreak began, there at least our teams start to have some kind of a vision on what we call the chains of transmission. So it's a bit like a family tree, but here it's a transmission tree. And little by little, our teams start to understand how the outbreak evolved, and they identified actually the families and the villages that are hit. And that's good. It's a good sign that we have this vision. And it's also a good sign that our team seemed to say, yeah, and people seem linked. So it seemed to be a few families or a few villages. And it's definitely too early to say it's under control, but it seems rather positive. In the city, in Bandaka, I have less in detailed information. But for now, it's few cases. So for now, it's all also rather positive information that we receive from the city. And it's not surprising that it would actually kind of stop or be small, because we know from the past, definitely in the rural areas from Congo, that actually outbreaks are never super big, because we do believe that what happened in the 2014 outbreak was that people really moved, because they did have the infrastructure, they did have the roads. Yeah, and people had tendency to move far away for work or to visit family, where in Congo, traditionally, we see that this is less the case.
That's Dr. Hilde de Klerk. She was speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson earlier today. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Africa Moto by Mose Sesingo. We've been listening to Mo Sesingo with the song Africa Moto. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. How'd you like the show? Let us know what you think. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.